We're taking this very seriously. We very much are concerned for the boy who's feeling so afraid to come to school.
A South Anchorage High School student makes threats against his classmates. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 20th of April. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Alaska-grown potatoes can't be beat.
People, consumers, we hear good reports. They seem to like the quality of our potatoes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Hundreds of South Anchorage High School students stayed home from school today because of violent threats from a fellow student. Today is the 12th anniversary of the Columbine High School shooting. Earlier this month, a student circulated rap song lyrics that graphically describe carrying out a deadly massacre at South Anchorage High. Anchorage School District Superintendent Carol Como says as soon as the school learned about the song, the boy was placed on a 45-day suspension. The district is now recommending he be expelled. Como says it's not unusual to have these types of threats around the Columbine anniversary.
In April, the week before and the week of Columbine's anniversary, there seems to be a heightened awareness of that anniversary, and a lot of it's in the media, and a lot of it has to do with this copycat idea, but nothing has ever happened.
The school had an increased police presence in the building today. The mother of one boy who was singled out in the song lyrics circulated an email yesterday expressing concern that the student who wrote the song isn't locked up at the McLaughlin Youth Center. Lisa Connors also says her son has been targeted by the student all year long. She says she wishes the school district had taken action sooner.
My son has verbally been threatened by this boy all year long, and just terrified. My son's grades have plummeted as a result. He's been a very high-achieving student, a gifted student, and has had very big issues at school as a result of this.
Connor says her son traveled out of state because he was so traumatized by the incident. Como says the police investigated the incident, but the student who wrote the lyrics is still at home with his parents. Como says she understands the family's concerns.
We're taking this very seriously. We very much are concerned for the boy who's feeling so afraid to come to school. We want to work with him and his family to help support him, to get him back in school so that he's able to focus on his learning again and finish the year in a much better situation than he is right now. I feel terrible that his parents felt he needed to leave the school for a while and get completely away from it.
The school district is holding a meeting for parents and students on Friday. Como wants to make sure they feel their kids are safe at the school. She says since the Columbine school shooting, the district has had extraordinary support from the Anchorage Police Department whenever students make threats against classmates or teachers. Sperm whales in Alaska have learned how to seek out longline fishing gear as a source for easy meals. Now a $350,000 grant given to the Sitka Sound Science Center will let scientists and commercial longliners work together to figure out how to discourage the behavior. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Sperm whales, it seems, have gotten into the habit of picking fish off commercial longlining gear. It's called depredation. Scientists think the whales are responding to the sounds of boats being put into gear.
So it's kind of like a dinner bell, and they can hear that from 10 miles away and come run right over to your vessel.
Tori O'Connell is operations manager at the Sitka Sound Science Center. She says the grant money will establish a bioacoustics lab in Sitka, where scientists will study the distinct noises that sperm whales make when they're munching on someone's catch. She calls it a creek pause.
When whales are actually about to take a fish off a long line, they make a noise that's called a creak, and it actually sounds like a door creaking open like in a horror movie. And if that's followed by a pause, there's evidence that that is a depredation event. In other words, they have stopped doing all that noise because they are now going after a fish.
Researchers are going to count the creak pauses they hear and figure out how often the sperm whales are picking fish off the lines. And once they know that, the scientists and the fishermen can begin coming up with ways to prevent it from happening.
We're not trying to scare them away or scare them off completely, just trying to discourage them from interacting with our gear.
Dan Falvey has been longlining for 30 years.
What you do find is a large number of straightened hooks. You find some fish that come back that are bitten in half or have obvious tooth marks in them. And lots of times you just get a couple of heads here and there on the line. You know, pretty obvious that something big has been feeding on the fish.
Falvey says the sperm whales have only started picking food off the lines relatively recently, since the fishing season switched to a quota system.
Before that, the blackcod fishery off of Southeast, you know, in the early 90s was only open for a couple of weeks a year. I guess the whale population just wasn't big enough to be up here and having an effect by then. But now that we fish 9 months a year, we're fishing during the time when the sperm whales are migrating up here to Alaska.
O'Connell, back at the Science Center, says the program will hopefully find ways to prevent the whales from messing with the long lines, but that it also has benefits beyond the fleet.
We will be doing active, meaningful local research. So this is going to directly benefit our local fleet. It's going to directly benefit the stock assessment scientists that work on sperm whales, and it's a collaboration between government scientists and fishermen. And so it's really what the Science Center is about.
And she says it will have educational benefits, too. Science Center staff already have talked about having science students from local high schools learn how to process the acoustic data. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The House accepted a Senate bill taking the first steps toward a hydroelectric dam on the Susitna River, designed as a source of electricity for the entire rail belt. The bill authorizes initial permitting and field studies. The capital budget contains $65 million to get the work started, but supporters estimate that the dam's final cost will be more than $4 billion. Anchorage Republican Lance Pruitt said that hydroelectric power is essential for the rail belt's future, and he reminded members to keep the project in their view.
You've heard me talk about the importance of hydroelectric power, and there's no question that it is and will continue to be a part of our energy solution. If we are going to make it to 50% renewable by 2025, we need to pass substantial legislation like this. I urge your support as we move forward in Alaska's future.
Dillingham Democrat Bryce Edgman reminded members that low-cost energy is a statewide goal. He said prices are continuing to go up to what he called the code red levels the state saw in 2008.
So what I'm hoping is that this project definitely will help us, amongst all the other energy projects that we've considered this session, will help lead us next session into even more robust discussion on the entire energy situation in Alaska, because it's not just long-term oriented, it's also short-term and near-term oriented as well.
The bill also provides money for two smaller dams. Both involve loans to build projects in Cordova and on Prince of Wales Island. The bill passed both the House and Senate on unanimous votes. It now goes to the governor. A proposal by Fairbanks State Senator Joe Thomas would help Alaskans pay for the high cost of heating their homes. Senate Bill 133 was introduced on the last day of the regular legislative session, positioning it for consideration next year. It sets up a formula by which Alaskans would receive varying amounts of money depending on the local price of energy and climate where they live. Senator Thomas says residents of the state's coldest places who depend on high-priced heating oil would get more support.
In Fairbanks, we figured average, I think, that we expected that somebody would get total probably be about $300 to $400.
The formula in Thomas's bill uses a base rebate of $200 and factors in the price of energy and the number of heating degree days to come up with individual payouts. Adults would get a full rebate, while kids would get half. Senator Thomas stresses that the SB 133 is only in working form and that cash payments could be swapped for fuel vouchers. He says the bill will be refined during the interim for consideration during the 2012 legislative session. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a hunt for Alaskan-made Easter treats.
We have two people on the counter that have been here since our first Easter. This will be our third. And they still have a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder left over from Easter.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
The State Department of Fish and Game has started field trials of a special taser designed for use on large wildlife. Sitka Area Management Biologist Phil Mooney included the tasers recently in a plan to protect researchers as they conducted a necropsy of a gray whale. Mooney says the tasers give wildlife authorities a powerful deterrent against a brown bear should it be needed.
In this particular situation, the taser would have been used kind of as a last defense measure before you might have to kill the bear if it actually charged the people.
Fish and Game personnel worked with the necropsy team to set up a flagged perimeter around the whale. Three scouts patrolled the flag line, and a fourth watched the beaches from an anchored boat. In addition to the tasers, those patrolling the perimeter were equipped with more conventional bear deterrents like cracker shells and rifles. Mooney says the tasers were used successfully last year at the Port Armstrong hatchery to create an exclusion zone for the safety of hatchery workers. Any bear entering the zone was hit with the taser, even if it was not creating a problem. A beached whale, though, is a natural attractant for bears and an important food source in the early spring. Mooney says the plan did not call for the 17-member necropsy team to hold its ground in the event a curious bear arrived. In fact, the plan called for the opposite.
The whole point would have been to not run the bear off, but the cracker shells would have been used to alert the people that we had a bear in the vicinity and to quickly move to get everybody off the whale, out of the area, back off from that, and to let the bear come to the whale.
Mooney carried two different versions of the taser, one with a range of 30 feet and another with an extended range. Mooney says both these devices are still being studied by wildlife authorities. He also doesn't expect the wildlife tasers to replace conventional deterrents for the outdoor-going public.
At this point in time, I don't see a general consumer use of it. Taser International does make a personal taser for kind of that niche where people are looking for personal protection. But I certainly at this stage wouldn't recommend that you're carrying that in lieu of some other type of protection.
The tasers have other wildlife applications besides stopping a charging bear. Mooney says the devices are being studied for situations in which an animal needs to be captured temporarily. The Alaska School Activities Association heard a pitch for regional and state wrestling tournaments for girls during its regular meeting in Sitka this week. Mount Edgecombe High School wrestling coach Mike Kimber told the Ausaw board that more girls would participate in the sport if they knew that there would be a girls-only competition at the end of the season. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Kimber had not developed a formal proposal yet, but he wanted the board to know that one was headed its way. He said that he's had between 7 and 15 girls in his wrestling program each of the last 11 seasons. Girls who compete against boys during the regular season, but who don't often get a fighting chance at the regional or state tournaments. Kimber suggested that the state was in the position to demonstrate leadership on the issue.
Alaska has a long history of female wrestlers. I mean, we were represented in the first Olympics by Taylor O'Donnell.
Taylor O'Donnell is from Homer. She was one of four U.S. women wrestlers to compete in the 2004 Olympics in Athens. 2 years later, Kimber was able to field a team of 30 when the United States Girls Wrestling Association held its state tournament in Sitka. In news coverage at the time, the competitors' attitude about their sport was pretty good. This is Jasmine Simeon of Antioch, who was wrestling for Kimber's Mount Edgecombe team.
Some of the guys at school, when I was little, said I couldn't do it, and I was just like, I can do it. And the experience is awesome, and I've learned a lot from wrestling, and builds character, I guess.
But there was not universal support for separate girls' teams or divisions at the 2006 Sitka tournament. Leslie Thomas wrestled for Wasilla.
Yeah, I think it's absurd that we should just have an all-girls team because then we don't get the experience of the strength, because girls use technique while guys use strength, and it kind of conditions us for both if we do both.
Kimber told the ASAW board that he was not out to segregate wrestling. In fact, Alaska's co-ed programs made the state's female wrestlers that much more competitive in college.
The reason they find Alaska wrestlers, female wrestlers, attractive to recruit is they wrestle against the boys. In Texas, they're not allowed to compete against each other. They're not so well recruited.
Kimber submitted a 3-page rationale to the board for its review. He said he did not expect action even as soon as next year. All he hoped for, Kimber said, was timely action when he did submit a formal proposal, instead of seeing it kicked around for a couple of years. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The highly anticipated project to bring true broadband internet service to the Bristol Bay and YK Delta regions has received the go-ahead from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's regional director has issued a FONSI for the part of GCI's Terra Southwest Broadband Telecommunications Project that will run through the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. FONSI stands for a Finding of No Significant Impact. That means that GCI will get their right-of-way permits to construct 2 microwave repeater towers within the refuge. Bruce Woods is a spokesman for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
It authorizes our issuance of a right-of-way for the Terra project to go forward on service lands in Togiak National Wildlife Refuge.
The alternative approved through the FONSI is the proposed action, which includes 3 microwave towers on federally managed lands. Those towers will be 60 feet tall with microwave and cell phone antennas attached. The remote microwave towers will be powered by diesel generators. The other part of the project that touches on federally managed lands and waters is the Lake Bed Spur fiber optic cable that would be placed in Lake Clark and would connect Non-Dalton and Port Allsworth. The man who's been leading the Terra Southwest project for GCI is Craig Johnson. He's GCI's Director of Rural Broadband Development. He confirms that some parts of the project have already been constructed, but the vast majority of the work will occur this summer.
Building the 14 village-based towers and building the mountaintop repeaters and laying all of the fiber this summer. Last pieces of the project would be scheduled for October timeframe, laying fiber in the Cook Inlet, Homer to Williamsport area. And then total completion of the project this year, and network up and operational by the end of 2011.
Once the hybrid fiber optic and microwave network is up and operational, there will be true broadband internet available across the vast majority of the Bristol Bay region and into the YK Delta region, where the Terra Southwest project will tie into the existing network called DeltaNet. Johnson anticipates rolling existing GCI customers who use a satellite service into the Terra Southwest network by the end of the year.
And then we will start working on the last mile portion of the project in communities and start beginning to offer new broadband packages for consumers and utilizing the Terra Southwest network.
The Terra Southwest project is intended to bring broadband internet to 65 remote communities, including Dillingham, Bethel, and King Salmon. The Terra Southwest project is being paid for through $88 million in loans and grants from the federal government's Broadband Initiatives Program. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The Alaska Grown program is working to promote local produce and other farm products in a bid to strengthen the state's fragile agricultural economy. A variety of produce is available at farmers' markets that are already springing up in Anchorage shopping malls with the coming of spring. This month, savvy consumers can save money and put food on the table by taking advantage of a glut of locally grown potatoes.
Yeah, German butterball potatoes.
I'll show you one of the pretty ones.
They have a yellow flesh, like a Yukon Gold, and a very nice natural buttery flavor to them. They're a nice versatile potato, and they produce really well. This is my third year, I think, growing those.
Alex Davis, owner of AD Farm near Palmer's Lazy Mountain, is already making the trek into Anchorage 2 days a week to man his farm product stand in an urban shopping mall parking lot. April's chilly breeze offsets the warmth of the noon sun, but the sunlight shines through glass jars filled with golden honey stacked next to jars of homemade jam, huge loaves of fresh bread wrapped tight in plastic, duck eggs, organic parsnips, and ice cream entice lunchtime customers. And then there's the German butterball potatoes piled high in bins. Davis says his dwindling stock of last season's German butterballs are going fast. That's not the case for some other varieties of potato grown in the Matanuska Valley.
We had an excellent potato crop that we harvested in September, and they've been in storage ever since, of course, and we are selling potatoes every week to Car Safeway, Fred Meyer, a little bit to Walmart. And the sales have been just kind of a little bit on the slow side. We could use some help in marketing the rest of our crop.
That's Ben Vanderweel, a major producer of potatoes and other vegetables in Palmer.
The newer varieties that we grow now, I think they're excellent eating potatoes, and it's pretty much a multi-purpose variety that we've been on the market with for a while. People, consumers, we hear good reports. They seem to like the quality of our potatoes.
The variety most available in stores now is called Norcota, suited for growth in a chilly climate. Vanderweel says last summer's cool and drizzly weather was responsible for a bumper crop.
Potatoes do well. They don't need warm temperatures. That's one of the best crops that grows in Alaska. I think that contributed to the good growing season. We had our potatoes in some really good soils, and we irrigate as needed, and when it was time to harvest in September, we were just tickled pink to see the beautiful crop come out of the ground.
Vanderweel says last year his fields averaged 22 tons of potatoes an acre. The potatoes are stored all winter in modern facilities with ventilation and humidification at his farm. But new crops are to be sowed in mid-May, so last season's crop has to move out. The Norcota potatoes are mild-flavored and versatile. You can mash them, fry them, bake them. If you like your spuds, now's the time to stock up. It's a buyer's market for Alaska-grown potatoes. Francie Havemeister, director of the Division of Agriculture, challenges all Alaskans to eat more Alaska-grown products in April for a healthy family and for a healthy economy. Vanderweel says Alaska potatoes are priced to compete with Washington State potatoes shipped into the state by major grocery chains.
Our farm only sells in-state, and we ship the Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage area, Matanuska Valley area, and then we supply the Fairbanks market as well, and those are trucking companies out of Anchorage that bring them to Fairbanks.
He says the Alaska-grown trademark can be found on red and yellow Yukon Gold potatoes, too. Every holiday has a food tradition that goes along with it. Hot dogs on Labor Day, turkey on Thanksgiving, and gingerbread on Christmas. For Jessica Taft, an Anchorage resident, the Easter holiday is an excuse to indulge in one of her favorite treats, candy.
When I think about Easter, I have lots of great memories. But what I remember most is the candy. I remember the hunt. I had to really, really look for my basket. And so the bounty was all the sweeter. In my house, the Easter Bunny was a traditionalist. Every year, he brought me chocolate and Peeps. This year, when I was planning my Easter menu, I decided to finish the meal with candy. Wanting to stick with tradition and to keep with the spirit of the Easter basket, I went on a hunt. This time, for local and artisan candies. And, with a bit of luck, maybe something new to add to my traditions. So I turned to Google and found Monica Cooper in Seward, who's making Alaska-themed peeps and selling them online in her Etsy.com shop, Alaskan Dermish.
I was into ceramics and pottery and all kinds of art stuff in high school and college. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just sugar clay. It's just a different medium that I can play with.
And the Alaska-themed peeps?
It's a homemade marshmallow. It's real soft and fluffy. I was looking for Easter cookie cutters last year. In Seward, can't find anything. Went to Alaska shop, and there were the Alaskan. Those are the only cookie cutters I could find in town. So I went, hey, all right, Alaskan peeps, it is.
Monica let me try one of her bright blue mousse-shaped marshmallows, and it was just like she described. Light, fluffy, and delicious. Perfect. Exactly what I was looking for. Next up, chocolate. Specifically, a chocolate bunny. I did a little searching and found Ty Duhamel, a culinary school graduate who owns the Hot Hot Chocolate Shop in Palmer.
How much are the chocolate bunnies?
The bunnies?
Yeah, the girl wants to be supportive.
Oh, they're nine each, and get the whether she wants, like girl ribbon, boy ribbon, milk, dark or white.
Easter is coming up, and Ty's customers are starting to get excited about pre-orders.
This is actually my second Easter. I opened a day before Easter last year. I have a bunny, I call it a bronze bunny, and it's basically a solid, you know, milk or dark chocolate bunny, and then I bronze it so it kind of looks antique. It's really simple, it's really classic, and it's good ingredients.
The bunny sounded perfect, like something I could use for a centerpiece and then send home with guests. I asked about the ingredients.
The ingredients I use for the store is 100% couverture chocolate, which means that the main fat is cocoa butter. I also like to use a lot of herbs and spices as opposed to flavoring my chocolates. I think that it makes for more, I don't know, real food flavor.
After tasting a cashew curry truffle, I couldn't agree more. My Easter candy hunt was coming along nicely. I made one last stop, Fire Island Rustic Bake Shop in Anchorage. It's owned by Jerry Lewansky and Janice Fleischman, who are committed to the artisan baking process.
Easter is the biggest holiday in a bakery.
Janice says this came as a surprise.
We have two people on the counter that have been here since our first Easter. This will be our third. And they still have a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder left over from Easter.
I heard they were making one of my favorite cookies this year, a French-style macaron. It's a sandwich cookie made from almond flour and egg whites that looks a little like an Easter egg and is a traditional Passover treat. Janice invited me to try one filled with raspberry buttercream.
So here's the one I want you to try because it's my favorite. Mm.
It's perfect. It's chewy but soft in the middle. It's delicious.
The hunt was over. My Easter meal would end with artisan marshmallows, chocolate bunnies, and French macarons that are all made by Alaskans. In Anchorage, I'm Jessica Taft.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. You can follow us online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Ronco and Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Jessica Taft in Anchorage. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. No other port in Alaska is building a 100-rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.